So who's speaking here? Anybody know? I'm asking, anybody know who's speaking? Vasudev? Uh-huh, okay. So Vasudev is speaking, and he's glorifying the Lord. Oh, my Lord, learned Vedic scholars conclude that the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the entire cosmic manifestations are performed by you, who are free from endeavor, unaffected by the modes of material nature, and changeless in your spiritual situation. There are no contradictions in you. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Param Brahman. Because the three modes of material nature, sattva, rajas, and tamas, are under your control, everything takes place automatically. Prabhupada's purport, as stated in the Vedas, natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate, natat samas cha dya dikas cha drishyate, parasya saktir vivarhaya suyate, swabhaviki jnana balakriya cha. The Supreme Lord has nothing to do, and no one is found to be equal to or greater than him. For everything is done naturally and systematically by his multifarious energies. As from the Svetasvatara Upanishads 6.8. This is a verse that is quite often quoted by Srila Prabhupada. Creation, maintenance, and annihilation are all conducted personally by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Maya daksena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Yet ultimately the Lord does not need to do anything, and therefore he is nirvikara, changeless. Because everything is done under his direction, he is called srishtikarta, the master of creation. Similarly, he is the master of annihilation. When the master sits in one place, while the servants work in different duties, whatever the servants are doing is ultimately an activity of the master, although he is doing nothing. Latasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. The Lord's potencies are so numerous that everything is nicely done. Therefore, he is naturally still and is not directly the doer of anything in this material world. Om Agyanta Midandasya Genajana Salakaya Chaksu Unvilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadam Mayam Dadati Swam Padanti Kam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So people like to blame God for what happens. That's a really common thing. Well, why is God doing this? Why doesn't God become more compassionate to suffering people? In other words, they actually understand one thing, that he's the cause of all causes, but it's understood in the wrong way. In other words, it's misunderstood. That he puts everything in action. He's like a watchmaker who makes the watch nicely and then puts it in and the watch goes. But he's not completely aloof from the activities as a watchmaker is after he makes the watch. He works through his energies, and his energies are working according to his will and his, what we say, desire. So this verse from Svetasvatara Upanishads explains he has nothing to do, but everything is being done by his will. In other words, he's not directly involved, but indirectly. But Prabhupada makes the point on both sides that he's both directly and indirectly involved, because although it's happening by his will, without him, there is no activity. In other words, everything is his desire. But he makes laws. And those who break the laws or do not follow the laws accordingly get a reaction based on their activities. But they blame the Lord. So they can blame him for being the lawmaker if they want. Of course, that's not fair. But still they do that. But they actually blame him directly. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I'm not the cause of anyone's happiness and distress. I'm actually aloof from all these things, but he places the material energy in function. And here it says, you know, he's actually the creator, the maintainer, and the annihilator. So sometimes we also understand from Shastra that Brahma is the creator, Vishnu, an expansion of Krishna, is the maintainer, and Shiva does the work of destruction. So although these energies are working, or personalities who are empowered by him to do the work, actually he is putting it all in action. Ishwar Parma Krishna Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinde Sarvakarna Karnam. He is both what they call the initial cause, and he is also the immediate cause. In fact, Krishna is everything, but he's everything and not everything simultaneously. Mayatatam idam sarvam jagat avyakti mortani matstani sarvabhutani nateshu pavastita. He also speaks in the Bhagavad Gita that this whole cosmic creation is actually, you know, a manifestation of my energy, but you can't find me in there. I'm not there. But at the same time, he is there. So is he actually telling an untruth? He's speaking in such a way as also to bewilder those persons who say that everything is God. There is a philosophy called pantheism, or something similar to pantheism, that everything is actually God, so therefore everything is equally worshipable. But we say everything is God and not God simultaneously. We don't worship the floor, but actually the floor is its energy also. It's made from a particular aspect of the material energy. Bhumir apanalo bayo kamana buriye vacha ahankar iti ame bina prakriti astada. He explains that this is the entire makeup of the material energy. But he creates the ingredients, and he also activates the ingredients by his form of Mahavishnu. But then at that point he steps back, we might say he steps back, and Brahma comes in and does the formulation of all the manifestations that we see in the forms of this material world. And so this is all going on by his will, but at the same time he's aloof from this, everything like that. So that does anything happen by chance? People say, you know, chance. This is like one devotee said to Prabhupada. Prabhupada's talking about this idea, chance. And so the devotees are trying to come up with examples that look like chance. So one devotee says, well, Prabhupada, I was in the shower this morning, and the shower piece came off and hit me on the head. Chance. Prabhupada said, no, because you're a rascal. So in other words, there is a cause for everything. It might be a gross cause, or it might be a subtle cause. Subtle causes also are initiating principles of gross causes. So consciousness actually causes things to move or not move according to the nature of the consciousness. And consciousness is spiritual. So ultimately everything is moving by the spiritual energy. But the material energy is also one of his energies. And Prabhupada was talking yesterday, when Prabhupada was talking about the scientists and how the scientists cannot understand material, spiritual. They think everything is material. This is just like when a baby is born, it comes out of the womb, and the baby now thinks, here is light. I have just begun to give my, I'm just functioning now as a being. But before then, the baby was in the womb, but can't perceive its own existence like that. So before that actual appearance, there is another consciousness, which is kind of an uncovered consciousness. We call that darkness. And Prabhupada used the analogy of sleep in the same way. So there is spiritual and material, but the scientists and the plan makers and those who are giving the philosophical direction in society today don't understand that the force behind everything is spiritual, and that spiritual force is Krishna, ultimately. So he's doing everything and not doing everything simultaneously. Everything is him and everything is not him simultaneously. That's why when you look at it from a logical, practical, empirical point of understanding, You can't. You don't get anywhere. That's why Jiva Goswami said, if you, one of the principles for understanding absolute truth is that it's not understandable. When you come to the conclusion that you can't understand the absolute truth, then you begin the process of knowledge. Then you can start to understand, because then you're open up to the higher understanding of how knowledge is transmitted through realization that comes by way of bhakti, and not through philosophical, empirical observation, various types of discussions like that. They get nowhere, ultimately. So here, a wonderful glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to show that ultimately everything is Him. And He is ultimately... And Brahma Samhita actually explains that, that ultimately when you study or you hear the verses of Brahma Samhita, everything is the Lord, both material and spirit. There's nothing outside of Him. Nothing can happen without His will. But does things happen without His will? He has two wills, or He has two energies. One is His will that He wants to see certain things happen, and then He has His called permissive will. He allows things to happen. Just like He gives us our independence, we can choose how to live our life and make choices based on that lifestyle. So within that double choice, how we want to live and the choices we make within that lifestyle, He allows certain things to go on because that is our particular desire. But at the same time, He has arranged material energy in such a way as that you can't fulfill your desires separately. So although He's very permissive in allowing things to happen, you can't win. You lose, unless you play His game. And what is that? The game of bhakti. That's all. Even the gyanis, the karmis, and the, even some very high spiritualists who don't take to the process of bhakti ultimately are frustrated in their attempts to achieve their goals because it's not Krishna's game. It's not Krishna's plan. So His plan is that everyone come back to Him in loving devotional service. So when we align our will with His ultimate plan for us, which is pure devotional service, everything we do becomes wonderful and auspicious, elevating, a source of happiness, and brings transcendental knowledge. When we act outside of that, we jump into his other energy called the material energy. And then that's a dualistic type of energy, where you can get any kind of result, not sure of what's going to happen. And based on the quality of your desire and activity, you get a result accordingly. And it's usually not what we like, because the element is that there's no happiness in it. Prabhupada was discussing, there's no happiness in the material world. He was very adamant about this. He's talking about this in one lecture. So, you know, the devotees, this is one thing about our movement is that the devotees challenge Prabhupada a lot. And Prabhupada would always be able to take the challenge and give the perfect answer according to Shastra and according to his own realizations. So there were so many questions that were posed that would have been, if they weren't posed, would have been sources of what we say confusion for us. It says in the Shastras and that there is happiness in the mode of goodness. One of the concomitant characteristics of the mode of goodness is that you can get some happiness. So one devotee says, "But Prabhupada, you're saying there's no happiness in this world, but what about the mode of goodness?" Prabhupada says the prominent feature of the mode of goodness is knowledge. And that knowledge tells you there is no happiness here. So that's the main thing. Not the so-called happiness is just, material happiness is an elevation a little bit above material suffering. That's Shastra. When you suffer, you understand. If you get some happiness, you're getting a little less suffering. That's all. Material happiness is another kind of suffering because it diverts your attention away from real happiness And at the same time, it gives you this idea that this is happiness, which is just as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Yehi samsparsa ja bhoga dukkha yonaya evate avanta vanta kunteya nateshu ramate buddha. That, this is in the fifth chapter, he says, the sources of suffering are the contact with the objects and the senses. They don't bring pleasure, they bring ultimately suffering. So all kinds of material happiness, although it may be defined in that way and give some kind of relief from material suffering, brings suffering in the future. That's the way the material world works. You can't win here. Forget it. It's a losing game. Everyone's still trying to play the game and find some hidden clause where they can win. This just doesn't work. Because the person who made the game plan is perfect. And the game is you lose. If you try to win by material energy. And what is that loss? You lose the opportunity for, you know, eternal life. So ultimately, Krishna's plan works perfectly according to his energies, just to push us back towards him in different ways. If you can see that, that everything that happens to you, whether apparently good or bad, is actually working in such a way as to bring you closer to Krishna, then you'll see Krishna in everything and you'll become Krishna conscious. Even if it's what we say, apparently a calamity, because there's some reason for that. The reason is it gives you a chance to come closer to Krishna. For a devotee, there's nothing inauspicious. For a non-devotee, there's nothing auspicious. They lose on everything they do. And ultimately, they have to give up the game anyway. So the energies are working perfectly. And Krishna is the source of the energies, and energies are just according to his will. He never makes a mistake. Prabhupada never liked the word chance, and he never liked the word, what is that? Was it another word? It's called, what is that? There's a word that gives it when you have a particular, oh, instinct. He never liked that word, instinct. Like, well, this person is acting according to instinct. Well, what is that instinct? It's super soul. It's super soul in the heart that's directing that living entity accordingly. And for those living entities and lower species of life, it works automatically. They follow their nature according to the body they have. But Krishna can also intervene and make it happen differently because he's sitting in the heart. So he can change the instinct. I remember I was in Hungary in New Rajadam and I was sitting out in the Vaishaka Kund. There's one right outside of the temple there. And I was chanting japa. It was early in the morning. And I know all these birds started to come. And it was, I don't know how many, there must have been over 100 birds. And they were flying frantically around the coon, going in and out and moving in different ways. And not one of them crashed into another bird. And it's impossible when you look at it. How is it possible they're not crashing? They're going fast and they're limited to a particular, they're in a particular space where they're moving and there's not much room. They're just going, shh, 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 shh. And I'm watching, I'm thinking, yeah, God's amazing. He's really amazing. To see, these birds were not at all touching each other. They were just flying so fast. I mean, if humans did that, it would be a mess. Because we have too much intelligence, and therefore we start thinking. And then we start thinking, and then we get in trouble. But we're supposed to think. But God arranges for those living entities below the human species of life accordingly. And there's no mistake. There's no mistake on any level. But we have our what is called free will. And our free will gets us in trouble. It puts us under one of his energies. And so you can't blame anything when that happens to you. Just like there's a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto, which explains And this is in the pastime where Maharaj Pariksit comes across the bull beating, his legs are being beaten by this low-class person who is actually an incarnation of Kali. And he's beating the legs of the bull. And the bull has only one leg left. Three of the legs are broken. The bull is suffering. There's a cow there also, and she's crying. Maharaj Pariksit is very angry and upset about what is happening. He chastises Kali. He subdues him. Kali asks for some mercy. Finally, he gives him some mercy. He doesn't kill him, which he was intending to do. And he turns to the bull, and he says, "Well, what is the, you know, what is the cause of your suffering? Why are you suffering?" And the bull doesn't say, "Well, it's this person." He gives so many reasons that some philosophers say that it's the interaction of the material energy that causes suffering. Others say it's one's desires that cause suffering. Others say it's higher powers that is the cause of suffering. So there are so many philosophers who have different understandings and disagree on what is the cause of suffering. And finally, the bull ends by saying that one who identifies the perpetrator of an act also becomes implicated in that act. Jai. Shishi Radha Gokula Ki Jai. Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ji Ki Jai. Gornatai Ki Jai. He says that anyone who identifies the cause of one's own suffering and says, "Oh, that person is the cause of my suffering," also gets a reaction according to that person. In other words, they suffer for performing the activity, but you get a reaction for blaming that person. Haribo. Yeah. Prabhupada said, don't be disturbed by the instrument of your karma. In other words, what happens is arranged by higher powers, either through the material energy coming from Krishna indirectly, or generally for the devotees through the spiritual Daivi Shakti, the spiritual energy, to bring the devotee closer to him, to purify them from some attachment, or maybe to give him a reaction for a particular activity that one has performed. Just like Prabhupada says, you may have been a murderer in one of your life, and now you come to Krishna conscious and you cut your finger. There's a reaction for something you did, karmic reaction, maybe how many lives ago, we don't know, but it's coming. So if one blames the immediate activator of the activity, one gets implicated in blaming that person and also suffers. Haribo. We like to say, we like to see things within the immediate cause, but a devotee knows that behind the scenes there's some reason for whatever's happened. There's other reasons too. Sometimes Krishna arranges something in such a way as to teach you something, to give you some message that, well, maybe you shouldn't be doing these things. Or maybe you should be more tolerant. You're not tolerant. Just like there's one story. There was one lady. She was a perfectionist. She was so good at everything she did. And she was teaching others also. And she would get a little annoyed when someone couldn't do what she was teaching. So she would say, "It's so easy. Why can't you do it?" That was her phrase. That was her constant mantra. She would change. She was expert at whatever she was doing, and she was a little intolerant of others not being able to come up to her, you know, supposed standard she created. And so this went on for some time, and then she got really sick. And she could hardly do anything. And then she was starting to think, "Well, I can't do anything now." So Krishna put her in that situation to kind of teach her, "Well, you're so judgmental and you have high standards for others. Now look at yourself. Do you want to be judged for your limitations in this situation you're in? You have to be more empathetic and see people in a different way. So she had that, you know, like high standard. So, you know, sometimes Krishna wants to do that just to teach us how we should be towards other people when we have a dual standard. How people should treat me, but how do I treat others? If we have this dual standard, then what happens is we get Krishna's messages in different ways. Like that. So that's a way of Krishna kind of like informing us about a little knowledge we need to learn. So he's working through his various energies to always to purify the devotee. I remember many years ago I was at one temple and I was leading kirtan. And then after I led the kirtan, I got this message. Maharaj, stop humming into the microphone. I had that habit that when I would sing, and then during the response, I would hum. So that was disturbing, apparently. I don't know if you ever had that problem. But so I was thinking, why is that person making a big... He was the temple president. Why is that person... And he didn't tell me. He sent me a note. he wrote it on a note and gave it to someone to give it to me. So I was thinking, such a little thing. And I thought, okay, maybe it is disturbing to the devotees. After I went through my mental gymnastics, trying to, you know, digest this criticism. So then I thought, okay, I'll stop. He's got a point. Maybe it is disturbing to the other devotees. So, but then I thought, well, that's nice, but why didn't he tell me directly? Why does he have to send a message? So I didn't say anything. And then I left, and then I came back about 2 months later to the same temple. And then I was sitting, and he came in, and he said, you know, I've been disturbed ever since you left last time. He said, I sent you that note, and I felt really bad that I didn't tell you directly. I said, Haribo. So I didn't say anything. I said, you know, please accept my obeisances. He apologized, and I apologized for being a little bit intolerant of his way of doing things. But somehow or other, Krishna worked it out. Krishna worked it out in such a way where I didn't retaliate against his criticism, and somehow he got the message like that. I could have said, who do you think you are? Don't you know? I could have went on, and I could have went in any direction just to kind of like educate him. But I thought, what is the use? All I should do is learn from his criticism and somehow maybe make some advancement like that. So, you know, Krishna is working in such a way as to somehow teach us tolerance, patience, humility, learning to not have a double standard where we treat people in one way and we want people to treat us in a different way like that. So this is all Krishna's more, what we say, subtle energy, but it's subtle, it works so perfectly. And for a devotee, if a devotee is always aware that Krishna is doing everything for that devotee at every minute to teach him something or to purify us from something, or maybe we're getting a little reaction of something we did in the past. Like sometimes you're driving in the car and you cut somebody off and you do it accidentally. And so you're driving a little way and somebody cuts you off. You say, hey, why are you cutting me off? Oh, gee, I just did that to somebody back there. I've had that experience a few times where it's a small thing and you get a little, you just somehow or other, when you do it, it's not so bad. But when someone else does it, oh God. So yeah, this is how material energy is working in such a way that nothing escapes perfect arrangement of the Lord. There's perfection on every platform. Even the material energy is so perfectly arranged that it's amazing how it works. It's totally amazing if we could understand the intricacies of this energy. But it's all being guided by Krishna's will through his various energies. And production, Swabhavik, they all work perfectly to assist him on the spiritual level and on the material. What is the assistance on the spiritual level? They arrange for his pastimes. Or they arrange for the pastimes to unfold in a certain way so Krishna's desire becomes fulfilled. Well, if devotees can learn this one principle, that nothing happens by accident. Everything has a particular reason. And even if it apparently seems unfair or uncalled for, there's something you can gain from it. There's something we can learn from it. And that learning is the positive aspect of that activity. We can always learn from something. So that's a devotee. And Krishna's not doing anything. But at the same time, he is the source of everything. It's just like when he puts creation. How does he activate creation? He glances over the material energy. And that glance activates it. And then from that, that's all he does. But he's actually doing something. He doesn't even touch the material energy. It says that the glance goes to his consort, Ramadevi, who carries the glance to the material energy. He never touches the material energy. That's Krishna. And what is that glance? All the living entities are within his body from the previous kalpa, or previous creation. They come out in the form of that glance, and that glance is carried by Ramadevi, his internal energy, who is an expansion of Lakshmi Devi, to Pradhan, which activates Pradhan, and then things start separating into their different aspects. They're in a more like a gel-like conglomeration. And then they activate. And then Brahma comes in after he manifests his appearance through Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and he puts everything in. And Krishna gives him the intelligence how to do it. So that's Krishna. That's Krishna. And what is Mahavishnu? Mahavishnu is simply an expansion of Krishna. From Krishna comes Balaram, from Balaram comes the Chaturvyuha, from the Chaturvyuha comes Narayan, from Narayan comes the second Chaturvyuha, from the second Chaturvyuha comes Sankarshan, who expands in the form of Mahavishnu. And that begins creation. But what is Krishna doing? He's just playing in Vrindavan. He's just playing with the gopis and the cowherd boys. He's not interested in any kind of work. God doesn't work. Sometimes they have this caricature of God. He's holding up this earth on his back. He's this big muscle guy, and he's really struggling to hold up the world. But he's got a lot of muscles, so he can do it. But it looks pretty ridiculous when you look at it. So there's some caricature they have of this Supreme Lord in the form of he is a support of everything. But he doesn't do anything. he just puts the energies in and they do everything. And he's just playing. He's stealing butter. Or he's playing with monkeys. So the spiritual world is all play. There's no work. So when you go to the spiritual world, we hope we get there, it's all play. There's no work in the spiritual. Here you have to work. Why? Because you got a body. When you got a body, you have to use it. And if you don't use it, it becomes a source of your degradation. So you have to use the body. In this world, in the spiritual world, it's all play. So that's what Krishna does. He plays. And if he has to work, he comes in the form of Mahavishnu. And he just works for like... Of course, when he glances, that glance is like a fraction of a second to him, but for us it's millions and millions of years. So we're getting a little understanding by hearing these prayers how great God is. When someone talks about greatness of God, they have to explain a little bit of that details of what makes up that greatness. People say, God is great. Well, what does that mean? It doesn't really mean that. There are people in this world who are also categorized as great. So if you use the same terminology and you don't make a distinction to qualify what is greatness, it really doesn't have any meaning. So here, the greatness is being explained. He's everything, but at the same time, he doesn't do anything. And if you look or read or try to understand what's going on, you become amazed. Even Brahma's bewildered by Krishna. Brahma came to see Krishna in Dwarka. He knocked on his door. Krishna's doorman opened the door, and Brahma said, I would like to visit with, Krishna. Yeah, it was Krishna. He said, I'll be right back. And then when he came to Krishna, Krishna says, well, which Brahma is there? And then the doorman went out and said, the Lord wants to know, which Brahma are you? And Brahma said, what do you mean? I'm Brahma. I'm Brahma. It's just like, what do you mean, which Brahma? And then he went back. And then the Lord came out. And then, of course, he offered his obeisance. And he said, my dear Lord, you're asking me which Brahma? And then the Lord just turned and summoned all the other Brahmas from all the other universes. And millions of Brahmas with unlimited heads came. And Brahma was... he was looking like, he felt like a little flea. He only had four heads. Some of them had 10, 20, 100, 1,000, million, according to the size of the universe. The Brahma has that many heads. So he became stunned to see just a fraction. And that's just the material energy. And it says, there's tripad vibhuti and there's ekapad vibhuti. We are in the ekapad vibhuti, we are like one small fraction of existence. But nobody can even understand that fraction. The spiritual world is three quarters. And that is just a way to give you an understanding how great in comparison this the spiritual world is to the material world. But if you actually understand it, because the material world doesn't get any greater, doesn't expand, but the spiritual world, because it's by nature spiritual, and spiritual is always expanding, it's always getting greater. So to understand Krishna's pastimes in Sri Vrindavan Dham, which is really the prelude to what these verses are, the prelude to Krishna's pastimes, Prabhupada said you have to understand that Krishna is Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. In other words, he is the source of everything. He is the greatest. When you hear about Krishna, and a lot of people, they get confused. He's a little boy. He steals butter. He pinches babies. He passes urine on the floor. And he teases girls. And, he jokes with his friends, and they don't make any sense when they talk. When cowherd boys, they just joke and they just make all kinds of... The gopis sometimes criticize Krishna, go play with your buffoon cowherd boys. You always are always talking nonsense. The gopis don't like that because Krishna has fun talking nonsense with his cowherd friends. But with the gopis, he can't do that. They get a little upset. He does that but they don't like that because he just teases them. But with the cowherd boys, they just have a lot of fun. They're just doing the most craziest things that kids do, because they're actually kids. One day, the cowherd boy said to Krishna, Krishna, you're one of us, but you killed all these big demons. How do you do it? And one of the cowherd boys said, he's got a special mantra he's not telling us. That's how he does it. Another one says, Maybe, but I think it's his mother. She puts these armlets and all these different mantras on his body, so when he comes out, he has all these powers. So Krishna's listening to the different cowherd boys explain or guess. And Krishna says, you want to know the truth? Yeah! So they're all eager. So then they get around and Krishna says, when I was first born, there was a great sage. His name was Garga Muni. And he came and he did my astrological chart. And he told my father that this boy has the similar characteristics of Narayan. In fact, he is Narayan. So actually, if you want to know, I'm Narayan. I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they start looking at each other. Really? And they're like amazed. And then, and Krishna's explaining in different ways how he is actually God. And the response is the cowherd boys are laughing. The trees are laughing. The birds are laughing. All the animate objects that are inanimate in this world, but are animate in the spiritual world, they're all laughing. The water, the sky, everyone's laughing at Krishna, telling that he's God to the cowherd boys. And then this goes on for some time, and then the cowherd boys say, all right, but let's just go play. So they don't really care. Because he's like one of us. So this is what Krishna does. This is where this is the essence of his existence. If we want to know God, you have to know God as the Supreme Personality of God, at Sri Krishna and Sri Vrindavan. All the other manifestations of his existence, his expansions, have a purpose. But his essential nature is he enjoys in loving relationships with his devotees in various types of moods. That's Krishna. He doesn't work. And he wants you to quit working too. Stop. Lord Chaitanya said to Srivas Thakur, Srivas, you know, you got a big family. And, you know, how do you maintain your family? You don't work. You don't have any occupation. How do you feed the family? Srivas went, Srivas went, that's it, I'm sorry. And the Lord said, well, what does that mean? Srivas said, well, if the Lord doesn't feed me and my family one day, if he doesn't feed 2 days, if he doesn't feed for the third day, I jump into the river Ganga and drown myself. Lord Chaitanya roared. He roared so loud he shook the universe. He said, even if the goddess of fortune Lakshmi has to go from door to door with a begging bowl begging, there will always be food in your house. You'll always have everything. So don't work. I don't want to destroy the ashrams here. That's not the idea. But what he was saying is that when one has complete faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the only activity is pure devotional service. So how do you get that pure faith? Well, of course, we hear from the scriptures and we also practice and we understand by realization. So I told this one time at a group and people were saying, should we give up our job, Maharaj? I said, no, it's not the idea. The idea is to understand that when you develop that complete faith, then you'll have that realization that Krishna is taking care of you 101%. That extra one is he goes a little farther than you do. That's Krishna. He takes care of his devotees like that. So it's not about leaving your material responsibilities. It's about using your material responsibilities in the service of the Lord completely, 100%. And as we get older in life, or as time goes on, we gradually retire from all activities and take up your devotional service. That is the actual siddhanta of our execution of devotional service. And then we become qualified through that process to enter into Krishna's pastimes. That's the goal. The goal is not a good birth in this world somewhere else, or the things that come by way of these, what we say, auspicious activities. The goal is to play with Krishna, or to interact with Krishna in the spiritual world. Prabhupada said that is what we are giving, and that is Krishna. That is Krishna. He's simply enjoying. There's no other activity. But he does everything else just to facilitate our desires to live in this world, but at the same time to frustrate each and every one of those desires, so we decide, I just want to play with Krishna. That's all I want to do. Or I just want to somehow or other absorb myself in devotional service to the Lord. And then one no longer gets touched. As Krishna is not touched by the material energy, so the devotee also becomes free from the effects of the material energy. Although the devotee may be still within the realm of material existence, still they are immune to the effects of the material energy. Just as we might say, what would be a good example of that? Just like when you're in a rainstorm, if you're completely covered with proper rain gear, you don't get wet at all, although there is rain everywhere. So that is the goal, ultimately. So Krishna's facilitating all these things, and he goes, well, of course he doesn't do anything, but he makes all these arrangements so we ultimately come back to him in pure devotional service. There's no other purpose for this material energy. And the material energy is here to facilitate our return to the spiritual world. It's not about enjoying here, making a temporary, it's about getting out. It's simply about getting out of this place. There was a famous rock and roll song. We got to get out of this place. It's the last thing we ever do. Anybody remember that song? Yeah. Yeah. We gotta get out of this place. It's the last thing we ever do. Well, put it on the top of the list and maybe you won't have to stay too long. Okay, any questions or comments?